I'll return with you this evening for one more time at the present to Nehemiah. Perhaps we might read, particularly as our text this evening, the last three verses. Well, we'll take the last four, setting the context from verse 28. Nehemiah chapter 13 from verse 28. The account Nehemiah gives of this period in Israel's history thus comes to an end in verse 28. And one of the sons of Joiada, the son of Eliashib the high priest, was a son-in-law of Sanballat the Horonite. Therefore I drove him from me. Remember them, O my God, because they have defiled the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and the Levites. Thus I cleansed them of everything pagan. I also assigned duties to the priests and the Levites, each to his service, and to bringing the wood offering and the first fruits at appointed times. Remember me, O my God, for good. I hope something of Nehemiah's story is set in place in your mind, if not before, through the series that we've been looking at this book, Nehemiah and Ezra before him. Now, as you think of all that Nehemiah went through, as we've listened to his story, what if you could ask him, so Nehemiah, was it worth it? For that matter, if you were able to speak to Moses at the end of Deuteronomy and ask him the same. Or Paul, as he wrote 2 Timothy, coming to the end of his life and ministry. Paul, was it worth it? You struggled, you fought on, you sought to uphold God's name. There have been those against you. They've made life a misery by any other standard. Is it worth it? In his life amongst us on earth, as he came to the end to ask our Lord Jesus too, was it worth it? Or perhaps to go to the son of Joiada in verse 28 and ask him, was it worth it after he had been driven from, presumably not just Nehemiah, but from Jerusalem? Or go to Tobiah and Sanballat and ask them, see what you've been doing. Was it worth it? What about if I asked you, just about this past week, all the things that you've been occupied with, was it worth it? Then how would you go about answering it? Where would you start? I would offer Nehemiah's way of answering, because I believe in a sense he is dealing with that question. Nehemiah, as he draws to the end of his account, commends everything he has done. He commends himself into God's hands. If you come down to the year 2013, has Nehemiah faded from view? He was a central character in Jerusalem so many years ago. Some might say he has faded from view. How many people of this world remember this man, Nehemiah? But has he faded from view? Whose view are we talking about? Whose view matters? Looking on him, who matters? What about his enemies? To talk about Tobiah and Sanballat is a a strange thing today. People give them very little thought. What about you? What about me? As time moves on, what about those ordinary people who have gone ahead of us? How many people today know many of the characters, even the key characters in the Bible? They've faded from view. But have any of us passed from God's view? That was the reliance that Nehemiah had. That was his hope. But we see in this prayer, which he finishes with, but which is also familiar to us by the time we have gone through this book. And whatever it is that we've done, the evil or the wrong or the good, how does God see it? That's what mattered to Nehemiah. Is it worth it? Nehemiah says, ask God. I will put my life in his hands. Let him be the judge. Didn't we read in Romans chapter 2, in the course of what Paul had to say, he reminds us that there is the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God, who will, he quotes, render to each one according to his deeds. Jesus himself said, he's the one who said in Matthew's Gospel 16:27, he says, the Son of Man will come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he will reward each according to his works. It's the long-term view that's drawn to our attention again, and one of the last chapters of Revelation, chapter 20, tells us again, each will be rewarded according to his works. Nehemiah wished and prayed that God would hold on to two memories. In these few words, in verse 29, he first says, remember them, O my God. And in verse 31, remember me, O my God. Remember them, first of all, those who were in conflict with him. If you ask somebody to remember, it, I think, generally shows some sense that the results of certain actions are not always immediate. There's a time that they will need to be called back to mind. There are times, too, when, for example, you might be traveling away and there's going to be a time interval before you see each other again. Remember me. You might only expect a certain situation to develop more fully at a later stage. Remember. It also suggests that the person you are asking to remember might have some influence at a later stage at the appropriate time. When Nehemiah prays, remember me, O my God, for good, I think it's a reminder that to us that he wasn't entirely clear just how his actions would turn out and how either he or others would be affected by them. And he simply prays, remember me, O my God. Through the book, he prays four times that God would remember him, once in chapter 5, verse 19, and then three times in this chapter, chapter 13, that's verse 14, 22, and again at 31. That's remember me four times, and twice he prays that God would remember them, here in chapter 13, but also in chapter 6, verse 14. It's a recurring theme in Nehemiah, this prayer to God to remember, which is an indication that he knows the full repercussions of all that he has done will not be seen, will not be found straight away. Whether it be in the wider community, but particularly regarding these individuals, those that he's looking at, but also himself. First then, those, he says, remember them, O my God. As I say, this he prays this twice in the book, back in chapter 6 as well. Here, in chapter 13, the ones that he asks God to remember, it would appear, are those who have, he explains later in verse 29, who have defiled the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and the Levites. And today's world might say, well, how important is that? The more I read in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, the more I think we undervalue the priesthood. There was a time when that was the only office, largely, obviously you talk about Moses as a prophet, but the main office that was functioning in Israel for quite a deal of the time and that God put in place was the priesthood. They were to be the mediators. They were to be the ones who would administer God's rule amongst the people, teaching them his ways, God's ways, and then to return the worship of the people to God. It had a central role, and it keeps reappearing, not always in the best light. It keeps reappearing because too often it was neglected by Israel, neglected by the priests themselves, and by the nation. And this is an example of it. And earlier in the chapter we read of that as well, how in verse 10, I realized that the portion for the Levites had not been given for them. And so the Levites and the priests were not being sustained because the storehouse was occupied by Tobiah. And he asks the question in verse 13, why is the house of God forsaken? Repeatedly, when the priesthood failed, so too did the nation. And here again were those who were undermining the priesthood, defiling it, interfering with it and mixing it with other outside influences. That's what we find immediately. The remember them in this case is those Joiada and his son mixing with Sanballat's family. These are the ones he has in mind first. But more generally, and going back to chapter 6, there it was the chapter where in a number of different ways the Tobiah and his allies tried to drag Nehemiah down and damage his reputation and such things. These were the enemies of Israel, the enemies of God's city. They did not want to see it built. Remember them. Remember Tobiah and Sanballat, according to these, their works, chapter 6, 14, and others as well. Remember them. This is who? Why remember them? And the first is, as I've touched on, because they are defiling the priesthood. That soil that strikes at the heart of the holy nation. Remember them, chapter 6 and verse 14. Remember them according to their works. It's their works that are the problem. What were those works? There were various conspiracies to trap Nehemiah and capture him, to strike him physically, to humiliate him, or to compromise him. And through damaging their leader, to undermine the people. And there's another place where he doesn't say remember them, but it's along similar lines where he is praying about these people in chapter 4 and verse 4. Hear, O our God, for we are despised. The people are despising them. And that's not appropriate. He talks then about reproach. They're casting a reproach. They're mocking God's people. And this brings dishonor upon God himself. Another reason why he prays that God would remember them. In Romans chapter 2, Paul is saying, there are those of you who you're judging other people for the wrong that they're doing, but you're also involved in these things yourselves. When anyone brings dishonor on God's name, we mustn't treat it lightly. We mustn't allow it to go on. And there's a participation in the practice of such of wrong things when we're silent. Nehemiah was not prepared to be silent. He brought these matters before the Lord and said, these things are doing you dishonor. The things that are going on in our nation today, let's at least be praying for them, over them, praying over the people who are doing them. They're bringing God dishonor. It's men thumbing their noses at God, despising Him, and despising His people. And so Nehemiah says, remember them. He doesn't always specify quite how he wants God to remember them, but it may be, as in chapter 4 here, and turn their reproach on their own heads. Reflect it back on them. Give them as plunder to a land of captivity. Something to match, something to fit their wrongdoings. Do not cover their iniquity. Do not let their sin be blotted out from before you. For because they have provoked you to anger before the builders. We haven't seen a particular reference to God's anger being shown in the account, but clearly it was present, and Nehemiah knew what was in God's heart when men despised his own people. It's a very strong reason for asking God to take particular note of what they're doing and what is in their heart. It's not usually recognized as a strong reason it wasn't probably by Tobiah. He just made up a nice joke about a fox going and breaking down their stone wall. Who recognizes these things for what they really are? Who recognizes when you mess around with somebody else? When you undermine their reputation? Anything that you're doing that is not loving, that is not lifting up the other. God is the unseen one in every such situation. He sees these things. And all the more, as God's people, we have a confidence that He has an interest in us. And we can pray, must pray, that God would remember them. How does he pray that God would remember them? By wiping out, ensuring that they have no memorial, no memory, no aid that they should be remembered. Nehemiah said to these very people earlier in chapter 2, verse 20, you have no heritage, it's a thing that lingers, a name that lingers, or memorial. It's not to be remembered here in Jerusalem. When we recognize what Nehemiah is saying, very similar to many of the Psalms, we sung one this evening, Psalm 3. There have been many who have said this is presumptuous of Nehemiah. He's passing judgment on these people. I don't think he is. By and large, he leaves it to God. He doesn't generally specify in any great detail quite what he is looking for from God towards these people. He's not looking for immediate judgment. He's not looking for fire and thunder to come down upon them. And they escape that. Nehemiah had trouble with Tobiah from the very beginning of his work, chapter 2, and he's still there in chapter 13, occupying a room in the house of God. Nehemiah is very likely, as we have seen through Ezra and Nehemiah, the presence and the significance and the impact of God's law being read. Nehemiah is very likely to have known Deuteronomy 32, 35, vengeance is mine and recompense. their foot shall slip in due time, God said. And that has been quoted, as you might be aware, in Romans and in Hebrews. That is the approach that Nehemiah takes. He's saying to the Lord, effectively wrapped up in this, I've had such problems with these people. Will you remember them? I put them in your hands for you to deal with them appropriately. But he is aware that, well, we read it on the other side of the picture in Revelation 14, the blessing of those who die in the Lord is that they may rest from their labors and their works follow them. Their works follow them. Man's works do follow him. In Galatians chapter 6, those seeds that you've sown, that's what you will reap. Not something, not another crop, not something different. But that's what you will reap. Remember them. Remember me. And perhaps to give a little more attention to this particularly. Remember me. Nehemiah's prayers for himself. Prayers, several of them, in a similar request. And again, I've read some and I've heard some who would say of these things, and if they heard you pray these things, maybe they would say, that's a bit self-righteous, or that's a bit proud, it's a bit self-centered. In chapter 13, verse 14, remember me, O my God, concerning this, and do not wipe out my good deeds that I have done. My good deeds that I've done for the house of my God and for its services. Isn't he rather sure of himself, my good deeds? Verse 32, remember me, O my God, concerning this also. I'm going to come back to this one. And spare me, according to the greatness of your mercy. And then that closing line of the whole book, remember me, O my God, for good. What specifics does he include here for himself in his prayers? In verse 14, he is asking God to remember my service. Don't wipe out my good deeds. But that in itself suggests that God would have every right to say, well, okay, he's done some good deeds, you might think, but it doesn't matter. They don't mean anything. It's based on a much clearer prayer. The plea that God would remember, would not wipe out my good deeds, is based on verse 22. This is Nehemiah's recognition of where he does stand before God. Spare me, not because of what I've done or anything like that, but according to the greatness of your mercy. And that final note, simply commending himself, pleading that God might be good to him. Commending himself to God's wisdom and grace. To look on his life and to remember him as one who looked out for God, God's honor, and God's people. He trusted that God's treatment of him will be good. I think we have two parts here. One is that Nehemiah knows and reminds us that what God does with us is his to decide. According to your mercy, I'm just throwing myself, you have to do with me as you please, but I pray that it will be according to your mercy. But the second part is that where God is merciful, he is also pleased with faithful service. You know the story of the parable that Jesus told of the three servants who were each given a number of talents to use for their master. And the glorious conclusion of the interaction between the first two and their master. You've done well. They're mine, my gifts. I've given them to you. I've entrusted them to you. And they are the things that have brought return, but you've done well. I have a reward for you. And it's something of that Nehemiah is pleading himself for these good things. Don't wipe them out. Please don't wipe them out. But do recognize them. We see this in a number of ways. And Paul says, speaks in Corinthians about the foundation of the gospel. But what are you building on it? You have the gospel. You will be saved. But it will be through fire. And the works, the life that you live, is it something that will endure the flames? We read, too, in Malachi. I read there partly because Malachi comes, it would appear, a little after, not a long time after Nehemiah. Now, if you read through the earlier chapters, 1 to 3, you'll find that the prophet is coming and talking about almost exactly the same things that have collapsed once more amongst the people that Nehemiah had to deal with twice in his book. The same cycle has come about. Neglecting God's house and his servants and intermarriage with foreigners. That's the same thing in Malachi, not so long after Nehemiah. But there in those passages that we read, again, the remembrance that God writes. This is what Nehemiah was thinking about. That all that he has done, it's as though he was aware that there was such a thing, this book of remembrance written before the Lord, verse 16, for those who fear the Lord and who meditate, or in Nehemiah's case, who labor on in his name. But these verses show very clearly the difference, the two different ways that there are amongst men. The one way is those whose hearts are given over to God in verse 16, those who fear the Lord and spoke of him, that it's poetic language, it's very brief and short, but it's those who absorb themselves in the ways of the Lord. But they still depend on the Lord sparing them. The Lord says in verse 17, they shall be mine, and I will spare them, as a man spares his own son who serves him. Again, remind us of our dependence upon God and his mercy. But the distinction is also there into verse 18 of chapter 3, you shall again discern between the righteous and the wicked, between one who serves God and one who does not serve him. By implication, the time is coming, and that is developed then in chapter 4, in conclusion. It's developed there that there are those who will not be spared because they do not serve our God. And there where the Old Testament closes, that's the final note. That division, the two ways of men. Remember them. Remember me. Some months back, when we began, I called Ezra the man for the moment. Halfway through, I suggested that we can also see Nehemiah as the man for his moment. They shared a very very short moment, as it were, a very similar moment in history. A time for restoration. A time for restoration of the people. Restore them to holiness and distinctiveness. A time to restore the temple, to rebuild it, as led by the prophets Haggai and Zechariah, the temple that God would live amongst his people. And the city, God's holy city, a very important theme that God develops through Scripture. But this too had to be rebuilt, and this was Nehemiah's particular role. Both of these men were very significant in relation to the particular condition and position of the people at that time. But they weren't just any people. They were God's covenant people. And it brought many assaults upon them. Had a great deal to contend with. There was a great measure of conflict by those around, but also within the people. So many misunderstandings, disappointments. And as this segment of the salvation story comes to a close, How should these people be remembered? The people who did the damage, the people who sought to restore and to lead that restoration. Nehemiah, how is he to be remembered? We reflect on Nehemiah's prayers. What is he asking God? How does he ask God to remember him and the people? How does he ask God to remember those who have been causing the trouble? He puts himself in God's hands. If you were to ask Nehemiah, after all this, remember me, O my God, for good. And he comes out of the place of prayer and you manage to interview him. And you say, Nehemiah, can I have a question, please? Was it worth it? If you asked him, if you had your time again, remember that time when Hanani came and told you the news, would you do the same thing again? Would you have got involved at all? Was it worth it? Having worked our way through, I believe that Nehemiah would have said, certainly, I'd do just the same. If you asked him, will it work out right from here on? I think his answer would probably be, maybe. I believe it will. But how you take that answer depends on your viewpoint. Is it the short term through to Malachi? Is it the long term? Is it the personal? Or is it a matter, are you thinking about God's kingdom and God's glory? He seems to be saying, I'll leave that to God. That's what we can learn. That's what we must learn. How often we wrap things up in ourselves and are not truly trusting God to work the matter through. I'll leave that to God. I had to do what was right. I have sought to do what was right. I have sought to do what was good. But I can only say to God to remember me for good. I must commit myself to His great mercy. I had to do what was right. This was my part in endeavoring to keep God's tiny people from falling away from Him again. And again, as it happened. I do believe that God honors that, but I'll leave that to Him. Was it worth it? Yes, it's been worth it. For this reason. For this reason. It's for His honor. Not about me. It's for His honor. I don't know if I told you, I remember telling somebody else that there was one day I was, I think it was a journey to Presbytery, and I was skimming through one of these in-flight magazines, and there was an article about when Apple, for their latest iPhone, produced maps trying to emulate the Google Maps that the Android phones use. And apparently when they did it, they were just bombarded with messages saying, this is sending us 10 miles up the road. We're not getting where we need to be. This is a mess. You have not done a good job. And somebody was looking at this, and they said they realized that this was coming from all over the world, except there was one hole on the map where not a single message had come complaining about what they were doing. He was writing in a European, a British magazine. He was aware of the American take on it and other Western take on it and so on. But he said, we forgot one thing. China. It was perfect for China. Google was a disaster for China. But he said, the lesson I took from that was quite simple. It's not all about you. And Christian friends, we must get a grip of that. Not just us here, but we need to spread the word. Nehemiah tells us it's not all about me. I've done this for the service of your house and for your people. And otherwise, I can just put myself in your hands. You will look after what needs to be looked after. It's about you. It's about God's honor. But Lord, please, to your honor, remember me for good. It has been worth it. Many look at Nehemiah as a great book on leadership. But let's first, rather than models of some kind of organizational leadership and so on, let's take its leadership on this one thing. And until we've got this right, maybe the others fade away. And it's his devotion to God's name. We'd be very wise to follow his lead on that. Was it worth it? What about your life? What's past? And ask yourself as you set out into something, is it worth it? What makes it worth it? And if it's something that you can commend to God, let him decide. Know that he will answer truly. And it's not that Nehemiah gets an immediate reward. That's not the judge of whether it's worth it or not, but that he can commend himself into God's hands with real confidence that he has been devoted to his God, he has sought the honor of his God. May God bless his word to us this evening too. Let's pray together.